This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The trio Low was originally known for its slow tempos, quiet sound, and close harmonies. Our rock critic Ken Tucker says, slowly, steadily, much like the music they're best known for, Low has become one of the most dependably surprising, revelatory rock bands. My guests are guitarist, singer, and songwriter Alan Sparhawk and drummer and singer Mimi Parker. They recently toured to promote their latest CD, The Great Destroyer. Life on the road for them is different than many bands. They're married to each other, have two children, and they're Mormons. Their latest CD departs from the quiet, slow sound that they're known for. Here's everybody's song from the CD, The Great Destroyer. I asked Alan Sparhawk about the change in Low's sound. He told me that when Low was formed nearly 12 years ago, he had an almost rigid sense of how it should sound, and he wanted to sound different from the other bands he was hearing.
When we started the band, it was essentially just myself and a friend of mine kind of exploring the possibilities of minimalism. We were fans of Brian Eno and some of the post-punk things like The Cure and Joy Division, even some of the quieter Velvet Underground records. And we just kind of started experimenting with playing as little as possible. And I think kind of somehow roped Mim into the band by promising her that she wouldn't have to do anything too crazy. And here's a drum and a cymbal. Just play these two things and we'll play really slow and quiet. And I don't know. I mean, starting with that extreme has been interesting because you're essentially starting from the beginning with nothing. And at least in hindsight, I'm seeing that over the years we essentially started from playing nothing, and over 12 years built to a point where we finally feel like we can play anything.
Mm-hmm. Did you like having rules to strain against?
Yeah, I think the greatest accomplishments, essentially in history and of humanity or even nature, have been because they were either, you know, someone or something was left a limited amount of resources or possibilities or ways in which to form the universe, and when you have those limitations, those are the times when you're pushed to. Mm-hmm. Go beyond yourself and come up with something that's hopefully beyond what mm-hmm. you could have done had you had everything in hand.
At your disposal, sure.
I mean, I don't know. I spent a little, I mean, like in undergraduate school, spent a little time in the art department. I was a horrible drawer and I couldn't paint, but I was really fascinated by the concepts of it and the way professors would teach you. And I remember being really excited about, it's like, okay, for the next 3 weeks, you're only painting with black and white. And to me, that immediately made sense. It's like, well, of course, we're going to we're going to learn way more if we just use black and white than we would if we just said, here's a bunch of paint, kids, give it a try.
Mimi, Alan said that he had to convince you that it would be okay to join the band. You just have to play a little cymbals and drum.
Yeah.
But, you know, first of all, that neglects to mention how wonderful your singing is and how much you'd be singing in the band. So what kind of music were you making before Low?
You know, Low is actually the first band I've been in. And I was in, when I was in high school, I played in the marching band. You know, that's my experience. I played snare in the marching band. And so very, very limited experience. my family was kind of musical. We would, you know, my mom had a guitar and she had aspirations of being a country star. So she had a guitar and we would kind of just sit around and play music. And that was, my role was always to come up with harmonies, because she and my sister would usually sing the lead. So I, from the beginning, I just learned how to listen and kind of draw and come up with harmonies.
I want to play another track from your new CD, The Great Destroyer. And although we're talking about, you know, like the new sound on the new CD and how things aren't just, quiet and slow, mm-hmm. as they were on most of your earlier records, there are things that are, in fact, fairly quiet and slow on the new CD. For example, the song Cue the Strings. You want to say anything about this song before we hear it?
I don't know. It seemed anyone who's followed us for the last 6 or 8 years knows that every record, I always seem to have one song where I'm really, really trying hard to be Roy Orbison. And I don't know. For some reason, I've always just been infatuated with his song structure. His songs that just begin and build and build and build.
And then
it's done. So I don't know. I've always loved that, and this is the song for this record that is that element. But I don't know. I kind of worked it out on a little cheap keyboard. Not very Roy Orbison.
Okay, well let's hear Cue the Strings from the new Low CD, The Great Destroyer. Music from the new CD, The Great Destroyer, by the trio Low. My guests are Alan Sparhawk, who is a singer and guitarist with the band, and Mimi Parker, she's the drummer and other singer with the band, and they're also married to each other. And one of the things I love about the track that we just heard is your harmonies on it and how your vocal harmonies also match with what the instruments are playing. And there's these nice held notes, and when you just hear these harmonies kind of suspended, you know, in the air and you know, resonating really nicely.
Thanks.
What's your process like for figuring out the vocal harmonies and how you want the vocals to harmonize with the instruments?
I usually kind of come up with some chords and the basic melody for the song, and then, I don't know, just sit around with Mim, and she usually comes up with at least the first harmony pretty quickly, and then, I don't know, if we add anything like third and fourths, it's usually just...
It's usually just off the cuff. It's just in the studio and...
Trying to get fancy.
Yeah.
But...
I was going to say, it seems to me your harmonies need to be pretty precise in this kind of singing. 'Cause it's, yeah. Because it is often slow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The long-held notes is something that we've... I forget sometimes that people just don't sing that way. You know, I mean, I don't know. We've just, early on, because of the slowness of the songs, we've developed this ability to hold long notes and kind of hold these steady, close harmonies. And it's something really that we developed just from practicing and working. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not something that's natural to me. Mimi for sure has, I feel, a natural sense for harmony. And she has a very smooth voice. But I think one of the weird things is that, well, one of the factors there for sure is that, I mean, we've known each other since we were 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
We've been, yeah. Yeah, we've known each other since 9 years old, and we've been dating essentially since...
Yeah, we're high school sweethearts. So maybe we've just...
We've been listening to each other...
Way too long.
Yeah, for so long. it's just easy for him to fall in and follow my phrasing and... Fluctuations mm-hmm. and stuff.
So you met when you were nine. How did you meet?
I showed up for fourth grade. Mm-hmm. We had just moved. My family just moved from Utah to Clearbrook, Minnesota, and showed up for fourth grade with the other 28 kids, yeah. And there she was.
Wait, so mm-hmm. your boyfriend and girlfriend in fourth grade?
No,
I think he had a crush on my best friend, actually.
First girl I kissed.
Yeah.
Alan, what is the monkey in the song?
Oh, boy. Now you're getting personal. I don't know. This record was written during a lot of confusion of my own. And I don't know. It's that moment where you're sitting there going, that's it. This has got to break right now. And that's that song. And I don't know if I've really written anything like that in the past. Usually it was always writing about something that happened and your feelings about something that happened, you know. And I don't know. Monkey is, all right, that's it.
In the moment.
In the moment. Mm-hmm. This has to stop now.
What kind of confusion were you going through?
Well, I don't know. I mean...
Mid-30s.
Let's see.
The
time of your life where people buy Corvettes. Some people go do this or that. But for me, I just plain kind of lost a few of my mental capabilities. Spent a little time in the hospital, and now I'm doing a little better.
You spent a little time in the hospital?
Well, not... I don't know. I don't want to go into it too much, but nonetheless, the last couple of years I've been, it's been an interesting mental struggle, and it's kind of strange to be sitting here talking about a record that essentially illustrated that whole time, and it's a weird feeling. I mean, a lot of artists have bored many a public about their their struggles, but I don't know. What are you going to do? This is my way of expressing things, and... It's exciting. I'm glad it turned out to be a good record because it could have been really, really horrible.
So was it like an emotional crisis or a musical crisis or something that precipitated whatever this was?
Well, I think honestly, it was. I'm still kind of working out what it is with some therapy, but through meeting with the people that I've essentially had to meet with. Because of mental illness, I've learned since then that this is a common thing. Men, sometimes in their 30s, can't hold it back anymore. And if there's something they're dealing with from childhood or not dealing with, it tends to exercise its leverage a little more in when a male gets in his early 30s. I don't know. If it's depression or bipolarism, though, that's when that stuff sets in. Usually, with a lot of males, and at least that's what I'm learning.
So that was like the issue: depression or bipolar disorder.
Yeah, mm-hmm. depression, mm-hmm. Suicidal mm. so to speak, and then just the process of coming to terms with that and realizing that that's enough. I can't do it on my own. I need to go get help, that's been a long process, and it's been so far positive in the fact that I'm still here speaking.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much this whole record was written during that time.
So it's interesting because especially being in the middle of touring right now, I mean, to get up and play some of these songs I get to review my breakdown, so to speak, here every night. But strangely enough, it's actually feeling pretty positive.
Something I often wonder about, and I know a lot of people do, is like what's the connection with an artist? What's the connection between their artistic gift and whatever like emotional or mental issues they have that might seem extreme? Do you know what I mean? So, is the music connected to the depression? And if so, like what?
Oh, which comes first, the suicide or the Ozzy Osbourne?
No, there's a certain almost obsessive quality to being an artist that also has its kind
drives
of downside.
Drives one mad.
Yeah, that has its real downside in the rest of life.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange thing. I mean, I try not to think about it too much because if you're in the middle of it, the last thing you need to be doing is doing any romanticizing of it, mm-hmm, necessarily, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really strange thing to write or to create or to make art or whatever, where you acknowledge that there's something higher, kind of inspiring you, and that feeling, that sense that there's something else coming into you or through you as an artist or as a creator or whatever, I think there's something about that. It's kind of like, you know, if the window's open, every once in a while the wind's going to blow in stuff that's not going to be so easy to get out of the carpet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think just, yeah, the same struggle that inspires an artist to do what they do, I think about 95% of it never goes away. And after a certain point, you know, it can be pretty strange, dangerous, and ugly. I mean, there's a lot of, and we know a lot of musicians who were essentially our contemporaries 5-6 years ago who are either really having a horrible time right now, or they've, you know, at some point turned to drugs or alcohol and are lost in that, or they've just had to just walk away and really be away from that part of their life to function and to go on.
Mimi Allen was talking about like his depression that this record grew out of, and man, when you're with someone who's depressed, that means a lot. It's almost like how your life is changing because of that. So. Stop me when this gets too personal. How did this period kind of change your life, both in just as not only as a wife, but as a member of the band? I mean, did you have to convince Alan to play more, to come back to the band?
No, I never had to convince him of that. That was never really an option for him. He's very driven person when it comes to that, and he's. But, you know, personally, it's just been challenging, you know, just been challenging to, it's kind of hard to separate the marriage from the band sometimes, you know. Unfortunately, they, for good or for bad, they kind of get intermingled. And if there's a personal issue between us, it's kind of hard to not make that a band issue.
You're both Mormon, right?
Yes, yeah. We are.
So, you know, you'd think that there'd be part of, like, you know, the rock and roll ethic, you know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing, or the music mm-hmm. scene in general, that would so go against your values. So has it been hard to, or challenging, to kind of redefine the music or the scene for yourself in a way that it kind of suits
works.
Yeah, it suits your personalities and your values and your life.
Well, when you come into making music from kind of the underground DIY ethic, I mean, there's only going to be five people at your show anyway. Why bother with the trappings of making sure it looks like a rock and roll show or that it functions like a rock and roll show? I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'd get in the van, go play. Just because the drinks are there don't mean we have to drink them. And we get back in the van and we stay with friends and we
never
go to
really
church
been,
when we can. And
yeah, it's never really been a problem.
No. In fact, most of the... We've met some really crazy, hairy, rock and rollers over the years. And most of them are a lot mellower and a lot more morally aware and clean than you would think. I mean, I think it would surprise most people. The rock and roll myth is alive somewhere, but man, we haven't found it anywhere in 12 years. So,
what has it been like for you to have a new CD? And I'm sure you've wanted to tour for it. I don't know how much you've been able to tour, but at the same time, you have a baby now, so you know touring is probably much more complicated than it ever was. So, how are you trying to manage, you know, being the parent of a baby with touring?
Well, first you just have the baby, and
it's a crazy combination.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you think about it too much, you would never do it, you know, because it's kind of daunting thinking of all the things you have to bring, the preparation.
If we were to explain to you how hard it would be, no one would ever pack up their children in a van again.
We're working out the bugs right now, but with the second child, it definitely has added a new level to the touring experience.
Yeah.
But fortunately for us, he's a very good baby, so he kind of just goes with the flow. And really, you just do it. You just pack them up and you just do it, and they will adjust.
Yeah, kids will adjust anything. It's the parents that
have the problems.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, Ellen Sparhawk, Mimi Parker, thank you both so much for talking with us, and good luck to you both.
Thank you so much.
Ellen Sparhawk and Mimi Parker of the trio Low. Their latest CD is called The Great Destroyer. You can hear a couple of tracks from it on our website, freshair.com.